you gotta love New Jersey.
I always find it funny the things that happen in New Jersey. Evidently, Madison High School mandated that all of the student athletes who would be playing sports in the spring had to attend a weekend assembly to promote positive leadership values, a culture of sportsmanship, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, they bring in people, you know, give them the rah-rah and, you know, be good sports and all of that. Well, one of the guest speakers, I guess, thought it was a good idea to display a picture of Adolf Hitler and describe Hitler as a good leader with just bad moral character and intentions. I guess, you know, along if you're going there, you could probably say he had a really good work ethic, too. But you just don't do it. Evidently, the school district has apologized profusely for whatever the guy said. And there you go. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world. Luke Vargas, chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, joins us from New York. Luke, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome, though. If you're counting on me to lift your spirits, I don't think I'm the man.
I actually find it quite hysterical that the school district wouldn't, you know, preview what this guy was going to say.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
You know, it's one of those things where you know
the
room
for the right reasons.
It's one of those things. Know the room, man. Know the room. Let's get into it. What's going on in the UK? Wednesday, the deadline, right? Brexit.
Yeah, not happening. I mean, the formal Brexit deadline is the 29th of this month, but the way that the votes in the parliament went down about a week ago, they basically gave Theresa May one final route to try and sort of pull off a somewhat timely Brexit without having to enter into a major delay, which could put Britain in all sorts of weird relationships with the EU for the next few months or years. And it looks like that route is now closed off. On Monday evening, the Speaker of the House of Commons, who is a man named John Bercow, who I desperately want to dress up as for Halloween because I think I can not only make myself look a little bit like him, but also totally match his accent as he tells very feisty lawmakers to maintain order in the House of Commons. And I'm taking every muscle in my body not to parody him right now. But he basically told Theresa May that she could not present her Brexit deal for a third time essentially unchanged in front of the same legislature on the hope that the third time around they'd change their vote, which sort of makes sense. She kept saying, hey, I'm going to make substantial changes to this legislation to address the concerns that you guys had on votes number one and votes number two. And then she didn't do that. And the speaker said, don't waste our time. And that closed off the final route that she had to pass a Brexit bill and avoid a lengthy delay. Now it appears she is going to, on Wednesday or Thursday, write a letter to the European Commission asking for a Brexit extension. We don't know how long that's going to be, but if it does run months, as seems probably necessary at this point, she will need to hold another round of European Union elections in the UK, which is just sort of absurd. It's a country that desperately wants out, but it's going to be forced to basically, you know, pay its membership dues and continue to contribute to the European cause for another few years in the form of sending some more legislators to Strasbourg. I think it's, you know, pretty clear that the European Union isn't ready to just blindly rubber stamp a delay on this either, that, yes, she may be able to buy herself more time. But, you know, looking at just the statement I saw from the French government, they're sick and tired of what they see as procrastination in England.
Yeah.
You know, they're ready to Brexit, but there was no agreement over how to do this. And, you know, the French spokesperson for the French President Macron was basically saying, you know, you've got to give us a reason for why a delay of Brexit is part of a broader strategy, but you can't just use it. It's not a strategy in and of itself. You can't just, you know, ask for more time and then engage in the same sort of foolishness you have been engaging in for months, if not years now already. And so, you know, she really looks to just be in a jam here. Her spokesperson several hours ago admitted for the first time that indeed the country is in a political crisis. It didn't really take an expert to diagnose that.
Right.
But delay looks almost inevitable now. I will add there is one remote possibility, and perhaps I rate it as being slightly more of a problem than other pundits, because yesterday I was at a screening of The Brink, which is a new documentary about Steve Bannon's efforts to spread far-right nationalism around Europe. And I, you know, it had some pretty amazing behind-the-scenes looks at his coordination with Nigel Farage, the UK Independence Party and big Brexiteer politician. But there have been reports in recent weeks that he and others who are very in favor of a Brexit and are totally willing to have a no-deal Brexit, where Britain sort of just crashes out of the European Union with absolutely zero tethers in place, have been asking countries like Italy, which has swung very hard to the right in recent years and has elected last year a government that's very Eurosceptic, as well as Poland, which has done somewhat of a similar political transformation, has been lobbying them to disapprove, basically to veto a Brexit extension, because the EU operates on full consensus that every one of the 27 countries would need to approve a delay to Brexit. And if the hardcore Brexiteers could convince just one European country to close the door on that possibility, Britain would just crash out of the European Union at the end of the month in a no-deal Brexit, which is what some people really want. And so that's, you know, again, probably is a remote possibility, but I wouldn't completely rule that out. And that would be, to some people, a pipe dream, to others, an absolute disaster. And for international markets, particularly in Europe, a disaster as well. But that doesn't mean some people don't want it. There's lots of moving parts to watch here.
All right. So while we're watching the sideshow that is the White House, how would this affect us, or will it affect us?
Well, I'd say, you know, the biggest risk at this point is a no deal Brexit. I think Brexit, and even that to an extent, has been factored to a degree into markets. I think a major question would really be supply chains, and I don't know how many of these exist, but supply chains that involve a product or good going from between the British Isles, mainland Europe, and then to the United States, not necessarily in that order, but using those three component parts. If you do have interruptions to trade, those products and industries and companies would be very much affected. But I do think the bigger impact of a no-deal Brexit scenario is mostly on the European Union itself and on the UK itself. By one estimate, I don't have the exact number, but just the trucks that get brought to Dover or the other sort of exit points of the British Isles en route to ferries and other tunnels and things to go to Europe, if there were just to be suddenly, on the day after a no-deal Brexit, customs checks, they wouldn't even take that long. I think they're like 30-second checks. But if you basically have to have someone stamping every truck that goes through, the cascading effects that would have on trade would cause backups that, you know, are days long. Essentially, the wheels of commerce in the European Union, because of the integration of that single market, have accelerated trade to such a degree that even, you know, hiccuping it a little bit could be sort of catastrophic in the short term. So that, I think, is the biggest risk here. But I think political disorder in many ways in Europe, and demonstration, or the supposed demonstration that the EU project is in such disarray, is actually more harmful in a political sense than even the short-term economic disruptions might be.
Well, it'll be fun to see how this plays out. You know, it gives us some more chaos to pay attention to.
Love it. Love it.
So looking forward to that. Let's move on. Evidently, yesterday, the State Department held a faith-based media organization-only presser. What the heck was that?
Yeah, I will say it's coming on the heels of Mike Pompeo being on what I think is a very disconcerting trip involving use of taxpayer money to go to Texas and other states in the Midwest to do basically, you know, corporate conferences like an oil conference and other things, and also just to do dozens of interviews with local TV and radio stations. Now, I mean, I'm totally in favor of public diplomacy. But this is a guy that many people believe has presidential aspirations and aspirations to go back into politics after he leaves the State Department, and fielding all these softball questions under the guise of it being about, you know, educating rural Americans about foreign policy, to me is quite concerning, especially when most of these questions are about, you know, what his favorite types of barbecue are and whether he's going to run for president in the future. So I'm a little worried we've got a scenario where he's passing off diplomatic work. He's passing off campaign preparation as, diplomacy. Add to it then that on Monday evening, reporters at outlets like CNN inadvertently get an email inviting them to a telephone briefing with Mike Pompeo to discuss religious freedom in the Middle East days before Pompeo heads to Israel to try and lay the groundwork for a peace deal, it seems, that when CNN and other outlets try to respond, they're told, no, you can't go. This is for faith-based outlets only. And that hours after this, and outlets being absolutely furious, and colleagues of mine like Michelle Kellerman from NPR and other folks over at CNN who are desperately trying to cover Pompeo but are basically being stonewalled here, learned that it was outlets like EWTN, Global Catholic Television, the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, and America Magazine, in addition to this reputable international publication, The Leaven, the newspaper of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Kansas City, were invited to this press call, and major non-faith-based outlets were not. The State Department goes the extra length of saying not only can you not be on the call, but we're not going to release a transcript of it, nor are we going to detail or answer any questions about who was on the call. Now, that's where we really start to break from precedent. And I have been on State Department calls and White House calls where they basically say, we're only interested in reporters that cover economics, or we're only interested in reporters who are traveling with the president to Kazakhstan or wherever it is covering this call, because we want to just limit the field of people who are asking questions. We want to keep focus. But in almost every case, and this is basically a precedent, they will still release the transcript afterwards. It's not that they're trying to bury the coverage. It's that they just want to have an orderly process for the actual conference itself. This one is very different. And I think the reason people are frustrated here is, A, because the Establishment Clause of the Constitution, sets apart the differences of, church and state, but also, the freedom of the press is guaranteed by the First Amendment, that it is very concerning that there's this impression being given by the State Department that if you are an American of a non-religious persuasion, that your views and are less important to the government, that they are catering their messaging to religious outlets. And I'm glad that groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation, of which I wasn't aware of until today, but now I'm certainly keeping up with, are, considering lawsuits here. They are already FOIAing information to try and understand what the administration was aiming for. And I would also just say it seems ineffective as well. I mean, if your goal is really to, it's not only possibly unconstitutional, and I hope someone can prove that, if your policy is to try and get more people to cover your efforts to promote religious freedom, it's sort of silly to target, like a small archdiocese news agency and then leave out the Associated Press and Fox News, even, news outlets that would probably be happy to cover this. So anyway, weird stuff, and it really made my spine tingle. I just don't, you take the cohort of journalists and you change it to say, we want to have a press briefing on female reproductive issues, but we only want male journalists. I don't know. I just take the example and start to spin this otherwise. And if we have a precedent where the State Department is picking and choosing who it gives content to, based on religion, gender, any other criteria, I think it's a step back for this country. So I hope they get hell for this.
And especially, trying to cover it up. I mean, that's the other part that gets me. It's one thing. I mean, we went through the whole Bush administration of the faith-based organizations having, all kinds of access.
Yeah.
But at least you kind of got a sense of, what they were stealing from us. I don't know. I don't know, man. Wow.
Scary. Welcome to the theocracy.
Yeah. I've been saying that for a while. And I have a lot of people who say, we need to impeach Trump. I'm like, no. I think Pence is much worse. I think he would usher in the end of democracy and hello, Christian version of Iran.
Pompeo is a weird hybrid, too. I mean, it's pretty easy to diagnose that in someone like Mike Pence. He's certainly an ideologue. Pompeo is giving off these vibes more and more, and his sort of just blind allegiance to Trump in exchange. He was asked in one of these junkets where he was talking to the press in Nebraska or wherever it was a few days ago, how can you possibly defend? It was a pretty stunning encounter, actually, with a local radio host. God bless him. Or her, whoever asked the question, but it's basically like, how can you possibly, say you're a man of faith or whatever and be aligned with Donald Trump? And his first line was, that's an easy answer. look at what he's done. You know, it's just
yeah, I know. Look at what he's done.
Well, I know, right? Depending on who's answering the question, that statement means something very different. But he would basically say, look, you know, if he's cracking down on Iran and that's the holy thing to do, then it doesn't matter what he does in his personal life or in any other of his policies. I don't know. Pompeo is an odd character, and I'm nervous that these sort of these religious ambitions are starting to trickle into American diplomacy as much as they are.
Yeah, is it January 20th, 2021 yet? Please. Please. Let's move on.
I can't help you there.
Let's move on. Pope Francis evidently blocked the resignation of the French cardinal convicted of covering up sexual abuse. Why would you block his resignation? Does he get pension or something out of it? What's going on?
I don't know. I mean, this is complete. I maybe shouldn't have even extended this courtesy to the church, but several weeks ago when they were hosting a Vatican conference to explore ways to try and adequately deal, quote unquote, adequately deal with this, you know, legacy of sex abuse in the church, which obviously is continuing. They proposed, or Pope Francis floated this notion that priests would in the future be compelled to tell civil law enforcement officials about reports that they hear of sexual abuse of children within, you know, the church structure. And that was seen as radical, you know, and that's exactly what we're talking about here. And it was sort of by some people said this is completely overdue. How was it that, you know, much unlike therapists or other doctors who, you know, sometimes you're sort of bound by certain broad rules about privacy, but if you hear about someone, you know, intending to commit a violent act against someone else or abuse of a child, oftentimes these professionals are compelled to tell law enforcement about that. The church doesn't even, or hasn't for a long time, pretended it even has anything close to that, saying basically the best thing we should do if we hear about this is to open up an internal church investigation. And oftentimes, because there's no paper trail for that and these archives are secret, you can usually bury something by, or at least you could in the old days, just shifting someone to a different parish.
Yep.
So finally, you know, Francis was saying, hey, we're going to clean this up. We're going to start to integrate, you know, our canon law with, you know, civil law a little bit. Now to basically say, despite a French court, you know, deciding, this is not like an opinion, this is a ruling saying this guy did violate French law, which mandates the notification of civil authorities. Pope Francis evidently, according to, you know, a statement from the cardinal who was had his resignation refused, the Pope told him, no, I'm actually going to base this on your presumption of innocence and that we're making this decision in the interest of the Diocese of Lyon in France. This is just more of the same, you know, and again, it's not newsworthy in and of itself in a historical sense, because this is the kind of action we've come to expect for a long time. But it really just shows you that, no, despite what you may have heard at that Vatican conference, the church is not changing its practices. They are not taking serious steps to win back the public's trust by, you know, actually opening up to civil law enforcement when they catch wind of bad things. This is a textbook example of someone who buried reports of credible abuse and is now being let off the hook for it and, you know, gallingly somehow enjoying, quote unquote, the presumption of innocence again after a court, a bona fide court, said that person is actually guilty. So this is galling to me, and I am no longer going to give, and I probably should have done this a long time ago, but I will no longer give Pope Francis the benefit of the doubt on this reform agenda, because clearly he's leaning back into the bad patterns of behavior that have characterized the church for decades or maybe centuries.
Now, when it comes to this issue, I give the Catholic Church nothing.
Yeah.
They've been criminal in this for decades. You know, this is not something new. I mean, this is, you know, it goes back probably you know, 1,000 years. Nothing new here, which is why, again, I think that the priest should be allowed to be married. Women should be allowed to be priests. And we should have public castrations of those who touch children. I'm just throwing that out there as my belief. You obviously do not have to follow along. Let's move on, because I'll get into this crazy rant about how much I hate the Catholic Church and how this.
I would just simply propose, and this is, you know, in the old days when I was growing up, used to be a radical position to tout in high school. I ran a political magazine at my high school. I think I wrote an op-ed saying, let's take away tax-exempt status from religious institutions. You know, that it seems to be gathering more and more support as sort of an idea as time passes. I, at the very least, if a religious institution refuses to agree to a code of conduct in which any reports of abuse of children is not immediately passed along to law enforcement, they should absolutely lose that tax exempt status.
I'm in no favor of, and it's not, it has nothing to do with, you know, the kid touching. Churches shouldn't be tax exempt for any reason. You want to give to a church, bless you, whatever, whatever it is, you go ahead, but nobody else should have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Simple stuff. Let's move on. Evidently, a cyclone in the African nation of Mozambique has the worst, they're saying the worst weather disaster in the history of the southern hemisphere. How come I didn't hear anything about this?
Yeah. And I, you know, there's obviously horrible flooding occurring in the Midwest right now, in Nebraska and elsewhere. And I have seen some people who I thought rather insensitively said, you know, how is it we focus only on that and ignore a disaster of truly epic proportions elsewhere? I don't fault people for paying attention to something happening in their own backyard. And unfortunately, Mozambique is one of those countries in the global south that gets far too little coverage. But this is really a perfect storm for them, and it's horrifying. The UN, one meteorologist at the UN said this is the worst weather disaster to ever hit the southern hemisphere, not just in terms of wind speed and other things, but evidently this cyclone, which brought something like 200 kilometer an hour winds, hit this area twice. It sort of pummeled it for over a week, and the rains are continuing. There are reports of 30-mile-wide swaths of uninterrupted flooding, you know, 10, 20 feet high kind of stuff, where rivers have breached their banks. By one estimate, I almost cannot even believe this figure, upwards of 100,000 people still need search and rescue. Now, when you listen to certain humanitarian snapshots from crises around the world, you get these terms, you know, in need of food assistance, severe need of food assistance. You know, there are all these sort of gradations that it's kind of difficult to make sense of. It's not difficult to make sense of needing search and rescue help. I mean, these are people who are on rooftops, in trees, on stones, whatever is high enough above the waterline, and they have been there for days.
Wow.
Awaiting airlift, and this is a country that is in no means able to respond. And the fact that I, you know, talked to two officials in these affected areas today via satellite phone who are basically saying, you know, we're able to place these calls to the outside world beginning today because the UN has satellite equipment, but nobody has internet. There's been no phone service for 3 or 4 days. How do you even begin to coordinate a rescue effort like that when it's difficult to know where people are? So I don't know. I hate the phrase thoughts and prayers, but boy, I mean, the people there in that country need some serious assistance. This is going to, you know, really be a setback to Mozambique, a chronically underdeveloped country, but they're in my thoughts, and I will continue to try and cover this in the days ahead because it's going to be a long road back to anything resembling normal there.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you were right when we started off. You are not cheering me up.
Well, we cover domestic issues on the show. I'm the foreign reporter, so I do pepper things in at the international level. It just seems I was just out to dinner, and I, you know, was seeing these reports of the floods in Nebraska, and I sort of thought at the last minute, how could I, you know, if one day on this show you get a report that the worst natural disaster has hit half of the globe in history, you can't leave it off,
no,
even if it's not a page A1 story. So, again, I'm not doing this to punish people or make people feel small-minded for caring about stuff locally. But, boy, I just don't. It's almost instructive to learn that in a day when this story isn't getting coverage, that the worst storm in history could have occurred on the other side of a planet and your news networks and other things weren't covering it. That's something you kind of have to point out, I think.
No, and I appreciate it because I had not heard anything about it.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things, one of those reasons that I'm appreciative of the work that you do and happy that you come on every Tuesday and give us your thoughts. Luke, I appreciate the time, man.
You're always
As
welcome.
Always, thank you.
Thank you.
Luke Vargas, Talk Media News. No, I mean, look, just mind-blowing. And I'm now looking at images of this going, wow. And I heard nothing about it. Scary stuff. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. The cries of war will sound the day. We stand before the dawn.
Radio of, for, and by.